Let us begin the session together today with the Sufi invocation. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So while we're not together in physical space, we're together in heart space. And what a beautiful opportunity. Of course, I want to thank everyone that worked so hard behind the scenes that made this virtual camp possible. It was no small feat, but we do know that, at least what I've been hearing, are very good things, and that people are feeling a deep connection, and they're grateful for that, as am I. And so here we begin in the name of God, whose mercy and compassion. As you know, this session is called Love, Light, Life. Let me adjust a little bit. And these are selected readings from Hazrat and Icon with some commentary by Nuri Sabato. But I'd like to begin with this beautiful question and answer dialogue that Murshid had with one of his students. And this appears at the end in the volume, The Gathas. It appears at the end of one of the, in Gatha 3, about tradition and customs. And this is the question. Can you tell something more of the time that God grants wishes? And Murshid's answer is this. God grants wishes two times. One time is when your heart is free from every thought or feeling or emotion. One time is when your heart is free of every thought, feeling, and emotion. In the most peaceful and tranquil condition. At that time, every wish that is sown is like a seed sown in fertile ground, fertile soil. Murshid goes on to say, if one hath the patience to wait in the great power of God, whatever be the wish, if one had the patience, would certainly be granted. So for a moment here, let us just take a few deep breaths to settle the body and settle the mind, soothe the mind. And think of spaciousness and great ease. And then, as Murshid said, if we plant a seed in this fertile ground of tranquility and peace, and we're patient, whatever that wish is will be granted. So what is your wish? What is your heart's calling? What's your heart's desire? In this moment, it can change. It doesn't have to be forever, but in this moment, what is it? Take that precious seed and plant it firmly in the soil of peace and tranquility, and let it be there to be granted in God's time. Now, Murshid tells us of the second time, and he says this: the other time when the wish is granted is when someone is satisfied, has been made happy by you. And naturally, out of their heart springs a kind of fountain which pours upon you a kind of blessing. And so, in a way, that's what's happening in these moments when the people that have worked so hard again have done so with the intent to bring forth the teachings that we may be missing in person, but allowing us to be together in this way. And may God bless them with good health and happiness for their efforts. Murshid says that, again, this springs forth upon oneself or the person that is the bestowal of this blessing and happiness. It's filled with blessings. And he goes on to say, it will be just like rain from above, which in time will bring fruit and flowers. So what is that about the reward is in heaven? I mean, sometimes it's not evident, the fruit of our efforts, and nor should we really seek to know them. It comes. It's for God's pleasure, not for ours, that we serve. But again, I want to offer my gratitude for those that have worked so hard to bring us together. Now, the next section that I'd like to share, these are from the healing papers, and the subject is exactly what we're talking about here. Murshid uses the word, the divine light. And this is what he says. The mystical conception that all life is the divine light and the whole creation is made of that light, which is the light of God, has its evidence in all forms of creation. Again, the mystical conception that all life is divine light, and the whole creation is made of that light, which is the light of God, has its evidence in all forms of creation. as it says in the prayer, thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Again, it's not always evident, but does it make it any less true? Or is it our eyes, our ears, our senses that deny us the faculty to see that divine light in everything and in every being and in every act of creation? It's a good question to ask ourselves. Easy words to say, I'm not so sure, so easy to live by. But it's good to be reminded and reminded and reminded again and again. Murshid says, at the source from which the rays of light start, they do not start singly, separate from each other, but it is a collective light. At every step forward, it separates until at the end, it takes the form of a separate ray. And therefore, we and all things have been created from this light, that one source. And it's kind of sweet if you think of it. The image came to me. Remember when we were little, and maybe you still do it now, you know, when we would draw the sun, we'd draw a circle, and then that would be color it yellow or orange. And then from that, we drew these little rays. You remember that when you were a child? It's really like that. It's one source. We're still connected to that one source. We have come from that one source, and we shall return to that one source. Just like that little drawing when we were children. Somehow, we knew the symbology of it, and we drew it. Think of that. So, also thinking that this illusion that we come under is that we're separate, and we're not. We're really not. So, of course, you know where this is probably headed in terms of a practice, those of you that have been with me for a while. I'd like to work with the practice Nur. And of course, that means divine light. I'll give you a few more definitions. But how appropriate at this time of year, especially because we have the light is growing, of course, growing, growing, growing as we come to the solstice. And more light. You know, Joe and I go to sleep so early that, my God, I have to start turning the blinds and making it appear dark in the room because it's still daylight when we go to sleep. That's how early we go to sleep. But we're old people. So, Nur, or we say Yanur as a respect, Yah being, O beloved, O dear, O divine one, O divine light. Nur is the light in every soul. And so, of course, those of you that have studied, and all of you have studied, presumably, I know you have, or from your experience, you have experienced this light, this spark. Something gives a spark inside. That's that divine light, and it gets awakened. And it could be with a beautiful sunset. It could be with a beautiful piece of music. It could be with the sight of a beautiful bird, a butterfly, nature, the stars. It's everywhere, and it's expressing itself to us through everything. But what's more is this is an inherent characteristic that is in every pore of the body. So when we know this, we know from science that if they look under a powerful enough microscope, magnifying microscope, that they see that really we're just light particles dancing, dancing, dancing together, as Rumi would say. So think of it, that this is the light of every soul, but what's more, it's the light in every pore of the body. We are made of that light. Now, I've started studying, and I've mentioned this because Gayan was very sweet and gifted me with this book that I've really been drawn to more, especially lately, and it's by Murshid Sadeen Neil Douglas Klotz, and it's called, let me look here, the Sufi Book of Life, and he talks about the different sacred names, and he calls them pathways, which is really beautiful. And again, if we think of that little image when we're a child and the sun with the rays coming out, well, those are pathways back to that divine source. So the 99 names could be like 99 rays leading us back to that one source. So he says this, and I'll read it. It's a quote, and I love the way he expresses himself. Murshid Sadi says, "In this pathway, we begin to see everything as radiant, alive, and intelligent. We recognize this light because the Sufis say, our own image in the heart of the One at the moment of creation is still radiating light to us. Light recognizes light." Someone can correct me later when we have some discussion, but I thought it was Murshid Samuel Lewis said, you will recognize them, meaning his students, by the light in their eyes. You will recognize them by the light in their eyes. And those of you that have traveled to go to a retreat somewhere, maybe even to Kansas City, you kind of look around the airport because you know that others are traveling and you're looking for that light in their eyes. And often we find each other. We don't always know each other. We know that we're heading to the same place. So Murshid Sadi also says this, in this sense, the light, and he's putting that in quotes, the light or intelligence of our senses, by which we see and hear and sense things, comes to us not only from deep within, but from a living past ahead of us that is still radiant and active today. A radiant past ahead of us that is still radiant and active today. So it's very interesting use of words. And of course, I've said this before because Pier Vilayat used to talk about this in relationship to the Big Bang. You know, he'd say, think of it, that singular moment when everything exploded and it's pushing itself in an ever-creating universe out in front of us, and we are witness to the past and the present and the future all at the same time. Imagine it. It's amazing. But that's what Sadi is referring to here, that past is now constantly still propelling out into the future, but it's really the past we're witnessing it. You know, Einstein had a glimpse of this, of course, right? So the Sufis know this too, from a different understanding. It's a different way of seeing it, but it's the same. It's the same. They understand this. So I'd like to, again, go back for a moment, and let's work with Ya-Nur, Ya-Nur. And let me see if I can wrangle my prayer beads off my arm. I just restrung them, and they're a little bit tight. Let's do the first time just on the tone, so it'll sound like this. Ya-Nur, Ya-Nur. Now we begin 11 times. Ya-Nur. Feel it resonating. See what it's doing in your body. Ya-Nur. Feel it. Ya-Nur, 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 Ya-Nur. Ya-Nur. And now we'll continue with Yanur to complete 34 of these wazifas with Yah. So Yanur, 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 Yanur. And now on the breath, we breathe in, Nor, and we breathe out. Nor. And now just silently filling that light, remembering light attracts light. Turn your beacon light up. Turn it bright on every breath, breathing more. Let it be the light that illuminates your path, that enlightens your intelligence, your deep knowing and understanding. Light that is purifying, cleansing, revivifying. Yanur. Returning to the reading of Anayakan on Divine Light. Therefore, the soul is that point of the collective light which stands separate and aloof from other points. Therefore, the soul is that point of the collective light which stands separate and aloof from other points. But the withdrawal of each ray within naturally enables it to merge into that collective light and life. But the withdrawal of each ray within naturally enables it to merge into the collective light, and life. Now, if you use a database at all to search in Murshid's teachings, you will see that he rarely uses the word light without the word life, and frequently you'll find life, light, and love together. It's just like a trinity for Murshid. And he commingles these as if they're one essence expressed in three different ways. And so here he's telling us, take a moment to withdraw, go inward, find that point of light that connects with all life and light. Now, some of you know that Murshid Hazrat Anai Khan, Pira Murshid, gave a practice. It started with this was his methodology, with level one initiation all the way up. So even the Murshids and the Pirs successively all did this practice. It was a practice that was done every day of one's life. And he called them, this was his version, it's not everyone's version, and I want you to understand that that doesn't mean that however you've learned the purification breaths isn't of beautiful benefit and with its own transmission. But this is Anai Khan's way. And he called these the purification breaths. And these are the words that he gave to those purification breaths. And when I post this teaching, there'll be an active link where you can look at the whole practice, and time permitted, maybe we can do it, but I wanted to get through the reading, but I wanted to give you a taste of it. Now the phrase is, I inhale divine light, like radiant light, and life, all-pervading life. So I inhale divine light and life. And then the out-breath is, I exhale divine life and light. So the phrase changes. But think of it, why would Murshid do that? Why would he change those words? You breathe in light and life, and then you give life and light. There's that interesting, subtle metaphysical reason that it changes. And as one does this practice, I can testify to this, perhaps others can too, but your realization grows deeper and deeper into the meaning of this phrase and what you're actually doing. A couple of days ago, maybe it was even yesterday, in the Bulasaki, Murshid was talking about give and take, give and take. And of course, we know that that's a big practice in Tibetan Buddhism, this idea of exchanging oneself for others, giving and taking, called Tonglen. So this is something that we see in many traditions. Jesus giving of his, the symbology, and those of you that are Catholic, you know, it's not even symbology, it's an actuality, it's a reality, the transformation of bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ. There it is, giving and taking. So, the breath again is inhaling. I inhale divine light and life. Think about that, drawing in light and life. And then when we breathe out, I exhale divine life and light, like a circle, a water wheel. I inhale divine life and light. I exhale divine life and light. Breathing in, I inhale divine light and life, and breathe out, I exhale divine life and light. Just continue very subtly, breathing in and breathing out. And if you like, if it helps to tether the mind, you could even think of that little sun that we drew when we were children. So as you're inhaling, all the rays are coming in to the core of your being, and it grows brighter and brighter. And as you breathe out, you're radiating life and light through all the rays, touching everything everywhere. And breathing in, I inhale divine light and life. And breathing out, I exhale divine life and light. Like a beautiful dance, giving and taking, exchanging, transforming, transmuting. Light and life, and life and light. And as I said, we have time at the end of the class. I'll lead the whole practice, but if not, I would encourage you to click on the link and look at the whole practice at least, and maybe try it from time to time. I have a very sweet story to tell about this practice. Mursha Hidayat told me, or admitted to me, that Mursha Hidayat and I had gone. He was rather precocious as a child. And so he said, I knew that my mother and father were doing something in their bedroom every morning, and I just decided I wanted to know what that was. So he said, my mother went down to get tea for my father. My father was in doing ablutions, and I decided I would run and quietly slide under the bed. And he said, I got in there when no one was quite in the room, and I was very quiet because I wanted to see what was going on in that room. So then he said, and what he saw was this, his mother and father sitting on the ground, cross-legged, facing each other. And Pyramurshid Anayat Khan was teaching and saying this phrase and doing this practice with Purani Amina Begum. So Mursha Hidayat was witness to that exchange between his mother and father doing this practice together. It was very sweet that he shared it. And I don't think he minds if I share it with you. I've shared it before, but very sweet, very sweet. And a powerful practice, simple and yet profound. Sometimes the simplest things are the most profound things. We tend to overlook them. Now, again, I'm continuing with the selection from the healing papers, but this one is number 8, and it's called The Soul in Itself Alone. The Soul in Itself Alone. And Mursha says these words, and you'll see these are all interwoven. Because people do ask, what is the soul? Where is the soul? You know, of course, scriptures teach us, there are many ways of describing the soul. But I think you'll find this one pretty much maps onto what all the great teachers have said. Mursha says this, the soul in itself alone is no other than consciousness. The soul in itself alone is no other than consciousness, which is all pervading. So profound when you think about it. Consciousness, which is all pervading. It speaks to this interconnectedness that we have with all things, and back to, we come from this source. We come from this one source. So it's like that, the hand perhaps. Here's the source. And boom, the rays come out, and we think, this is Nuria, this is Nur Latifa, this is Gemma, this is Radha. No. We're all back here. We're all connected, like that sun. But Mursha says this, but when the same consciousness is caught in a limitation through being surrounded by elements, in that state of captivity, it is called soul. So consciousness can, you know, it's like the breath coming into the clay and the human being is born. We know that. We've heard that. It's like that. Or the reed being hollow and the holes getting punctured in it and the breath coming in and it starts to sing and become alive. The soul in that way somehow becomes captive within the elements. And of course, where are those elements? They're everywhere, but they're also here in this physical manifestation. It's very interesting. In the Upanishads, it describes the soul as something interesting enough, like about the size of the thumb, a spot of light that sits behind the heart. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, but you know, hold that image, that's that little spark of light that's in everyone. The namaste, the namaskar. I bow to the divine light in you, recognizing that divine light in every being. Not always easy, but it is there. It is there. So Murshid gives us a little example here. He says, the Chinese use the simile of a bee. Zzz, bee. The Chinese use the simile of a bee when describing the soul. Where's he headed with this? It is symbolical and really denotes the eye, E-Y-E, the pupil of which is like a bee. In other words, the nature of the soul may be studied in the nature of the eye. All things, this is interesting because remember, soul is consciousness, but then it comes in captivity into the elemental world. So he says, all things exposed to the eye are reflected in it for the moment. So I look there and that becomes my reality. And I look there and that becomes my reality. All things exposed to the eye are reflected in it for the moment. Now, again, thinking of the eye soul. In this context, they're connected. So all things exposed to the eye, or we could say all things exposed to the soul, are reflected in it for the moment. And when the eye is turned away, the reflection in it, it is no more. It had received it for the moment only. But I'm going to pause here and also add some commentary, and I'm going to ask the question, or has it? Because that's the way it would ideally work. We would momentarily notice something, participate in the present moment. This is presence. This is being in the moment. And then we would release it to move on to the next moment. But the question is, do we? Because, or do we replay things like a broken record and go over them and over them and over them, making deeper impressions? You see, it's a very different reality whether we do that or we live in the moment, and we're just on to the next moment. So Murshid is giving us a really, I think, very deep teaching here of being present and practicing presence. And I bet you someone's offering some subject along that way during this camp. So Murshid goes on to say, such is the nature of the soul. Youth, age, beauty, ugliness, sin, or virtue, all these are before the soul when they are exposed to the soul during the physical or mental exercise or existence, excuse me. And the soul, interested in the reflection, may be for the time attracted and bound by the object reflected. But as soon as the soul turns away, it is free from it. It is free from it. So we have to be very conscious, because we can free ourselves of things. And we can, we really can. And there lies the light and the love and the life. And I say even more joy, experience. But yes, of course, Murshid said, there's beauty, there's ugliness, there's sin, there's virtue, there's sadness, there's happiness. But he explains that in just a few minutes, so I'll go on. But I want to read that whole, two sentences again. It's important. Every experience on the physical or astral, no, I got to go back. I got ahead of myself. Such is the nature of the soul. Youth, age, beauty, ugliness, sin, or virtue. Someone should come in and they need to be muted, please. Okay, thank you. Such is the nature of the soul. Youth, age, beauty, ugliness, sin, or virtue. All these are before the soul when they are exposed to it during the physical or mental existence. So you even think of something. It'd be great to have an ice cream cone right now. Boop, it's a mental configuration. Or physical, you notice something. And the soul interested in the reflection may be for the time attracted and bound by the object reflected. But as soon as the soul turns away, it is free from it. So we have to really be mindful of that. In Tibetan Buddhist terms, no attachment, no aversion. So not becoming tethered to physical objects or mental objects that arise, or emotional states that arise. And this is part of the Nirmanakaya teaching, the sutras on the different manifestations to the physical body, the mental body, the emotional body, the illusory body. And, we begin to think those things are real and they're not. The soul is pure consciousness, but it can become captive. And we have to be mindful of what we're attracted to, because that does in prison, and maybe we'd say, brings the soul into captivity. And it would be nice if it were free to soar above these things, experience life, and yet not be too tethered to life. Every experience on the physical or astral plane is just a dream before the soul. Every experience on the physical or astral plane is just a dream before the soul. It is ignorance when it takes the experience to be real. It is ignorance when it takes the experience to be real. It does so because it cannot see itself, as the eye sees all things but does not see itself. Therefore, the soul identifies itself with all things that it sees and changes its own identity with the change of its constantly changing vision. And then what happens? We've heard the term that someone has lost their soul. This, in a way, might be good to make note to yourself, that later you may want to go and do some reading that Murshid gives on independence and indifference, and also on renunciation, because we're not talking about renunciation is renouncing this kind of thinking. It's renouncing the small self that identifies with these. That's what renunciation is. And indifference and independence teaches us that we can rise above sentimentality and maybe experience the purity of an emotion, but without attachment, and we move on. It's very important to stay present in the moment and not to imprison ourselves. Again, easy to say, maybe not so easy to do. It takes a lifetime of mindfulness. There's that word mindfulness. What does it really mean, mindfulness? Am I attached to that thing? Am I noticing it too much? Is it taking too much importance in my life? Good to know. Good to look at that. Be mindful. Be mindful. Now, Murshid says here, the soul has no birth, no death, no beginning, no end. No birth, no death, no beginning, no end. Sin cannot touch it, nor can virtue exalt it. Wisdom cannot open it up, nor can ignorance darken it. It has been always, and it always will be. This is the very being of man and of woman. And I would say of all things, and all else is its cover, like a globe on the light. All else is like a cover, like the globe on the light. So this body is, our thoughts are, our feelings are, it's all the globe over that light. Does this make sense? Is everyone following me? Little shake of the head, saying, yeah, I'm getting it. Hakima, I have no idea what you're doing there, my dear, but we're going round and round in swirls with you. My soul just got captivated for a moment. The soul's unfoldment comes from its own power. Oh, if you don't remember anything else from today, remember that, okay? To mute our dear, there we go. Okay. The soul's unfoldment comes from its own power. The soul's unfoldment comes from its own power? It's so empowering. The soul's unfoldment comes from its own power, which ends in its breaking through the ties of the lower plane. Which ends in its breaking through the ties of the lower planes. Very important to think about. What's tying us down? What tethers us? Is that preventing the empowerment and the unfoldment of the soul to recognize itself? It is, meaning the soul is free by nature and looks for freedom during its captivity. You know, do you ever experience longing? Or, oh my gosh, your heart is just so open and you feel like you're falling into something and you want to fall into something, but you don't even know what that something is. You may get confused for a moment and think it's a person. I'm telling you, good luck with that. Everything changes. I love Joe, you know, but things could change tomorrow. I don't know. I'm okay with that if it does. I've had a great time. You know, it's like a career. I had a great career, and when I decided it was complete, it was complete. So, you know, it may not be that easy for others, but for me it has been. I'm willing to let go. But I can't say that I've accomplished this, you know. The soul's unfoldment comes from its own power, which ends in its breaking through the ties of the lower plane. It is free by nature and looks for freedom during its captivity. All the holy beings of the world have become so by freeing the soul, its freedom being the only object there is in life. Its freedom being the only object there is in life, the soul being free. Raise us from the denseness of the earth. Raise us from the denseness of the earth. Raise us from the denseness of our mind, our thinking. I say that to myself, perhaps. No one else needs the reminder. I do. Now there's a beautiful practice that Piramarshadan Nayak Khan gave, and I have only done it very long time ago. With Murshida Vera, she gave this at an Ozark camp, and I believe she only came to our spring camps. So this is in remembrance of Murshida Vera that shared this, but it is originally from a Nayak Khan, and it's a part of a sequence. So the first part of the sequence is the purification breaths. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light, and then if you go to that practice on the website, this teaching will be posted. You can read it again and study it further and look up the resources that I've used. And then there will be the link to the purification breaths. And then at the end of the purification breaths, what Murshid has taught is that the breath cycle is like we've all learned for the elemental breath, and perhaps you've been given another form of a purification breath. Nonetheless, a purification breath. But at the end of this cycle, it's the cycle goes, as you know, in the breathing in the nose and out the nose, in the nose and out the mouth, in the mouth and out the nose, in the mouth and out the mouth, then in the nose and out the nose again. And on that practice, one lets go of the phrase, I inhale divine light and life, and then it's the nyas, the breathing in. Beloved Lord Almighty God, through the rays of the sun, through the waves of the air, through the all-pervading life and space, purify and revivify me. The breath is held on the words, and I pray, and then breathing out, heal my body, heart, and soul. Now, at the end of that, there's still another practice as given by an icon. And it goes like this. I'm hoping you'll be able to see it. And you might want to do it with me. I can say the words. I'll show you once, and then we can do it a couple of times together. And it's very beautiful because it's a reminder that the soul can be is untouched and can constantly be rekindled with our mindfulness towards the light, and nothing has to touch it, nothing from the past and nothing in the present. So this practice goes, and I'll try to do it here, and I'm going to maybe crouch down a little bit or do it in front of my face, but the hands come up from the side, so I bring my hands up, and then they go here, you know, almost like that I dream a genie pose. So the words are this way, I'll say them. Hands coming up, and it's on the in-breath, so you can breathe in. I come from the perfect source, and I am bound to the perfect goal. Hold your hands with your breath. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. Now hands like this. I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. So in that one, we'll do it again, but I want to go through the phrases because I come from the perfect source and I am bound to the perfect goal. Again, the sun. I come from that perfect source, and I am bound to that perfect goal. And then when we hold our breath, the light of the perfect being, we come to stillness. Think about it. We're holding our breath. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. We turn inward. We feel that light. We connect with that light inwardly. And then we take our hands. And for me, this motion, I live, move, and have my being in God. You remember when you were initiated, what your initiator did? They took their hands and they lightly touched your head, and they moved their hands down over your etheric field, blessing it, filling it with blessings of all those that they've invoked, all the masters, saints, and prophets, the spiritual hierarchy. So in a way, we're reconfirming that. We're reconfirming it. Such a beautiful practice. And then I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all, and Murshid is talking about lifting the consciousness, freeing it from captivity. So that phrase, I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. Now think about this, because we have all suffered some sort of injustice. Some of us have been even perhaps at the hands of people that love us and cared for us. But you know, that is not, someone sent me, I have a lot of friends, I think it was someone from Kashmir or, the saying was on karma. What people do to you is their karma. How you react to them is your karma. So again, perhaps some, like I said, some injustice has come upon oneself. I'm very sorry for that. I understand how painful that can be. But I also know that the practices and mindfulness can help us with aligning one's will with God, aligning one's will with one's God to be healed, to be purified, and importantly, to forgive. It's not easy, but forgiveness is an aspect. It's a great grace because it helps us to uproot the attachment to the story, to the wound, and it helps us begin to, it's like a balm to help us heal. So I'm saying this because if we have a story that we keep telling ourselves or telling others, here's a teaching that Murshid is asking us to stay in the present moment. I understand that people can have post-traumatic shock and that gets re-stimulated. I think in some ways, you know, my experiences around the world, there's some of that I can see when I get re-stimulated, but I can catch myself. It's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. And I pray for all beings in the world to be relieved of their suffering and feel the light of their soul. And I pray that this coronavirus finds a home somewhere other than in our bodies and can live wherever it needs to without such destruction. If nothing else, it is reminding us of the very preciousness of life and not to waste one moment with sorrow. Try to do what one can to heal that and overcome it. So I've said a lot of words there for this practice, but it's a practice that's touched me deeply and is so very helpful, especially when I feel maybe down or again an injustice or someone said something unkind and maybe even behind my back and whatever. You know, this happens to all of us. It's called life. And it's like, you know, loving is the most important thing. Always. No matter what people are doing to you, just keep loving them. If you can. And be honest. It's a process. So, enough said. Let's do the practice. I'll say the words and you can do the, I'll try to give the instructions. So breathing in. I come from the perfect source and I am bound to the perfect goal. Hold your breath. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. And breathe out. I live, move, and have my being in God. And nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. Breathing in. I come from the perfect source and I am bound to the perfect goal. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. I live, breathe out, move, and have my being in God. and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. And breathing in, I come from the perfect source, and I am bound to the perfect goal. Hold, the light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. And release, I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. People sometimes say, well, why didn't Merchant include the future? And I say, well, it hasn't happened yet. All we have is the present moment. Try not to get so far ahead of ourselves. The other thing that comes to me, and I'll share it with you, not that that should be your experience or visualization, but it comes every time I do this practice. And that is, I get this image of Mount Fuji, and it's covered with clouds. And as I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me, I rise above all. It's like the clouds are lifting or dissipating, and the clear Mount Fuji's there in view. So it's like rising above, I would say. It's that, gives that feeling of being taken up. Raises above the denseness of the earth. Now the next selection is from the paper, it's again from the Healing Papers, and it's number 16. And these were all little short sections that I spoke to me, and I thought I would weave together for us today. And the title of this paper is The Experience of the Soul Through the Heart. The experience of the soul through the heart. So think of that again. When I was talking about the Upanishads, it was to think of that as the thumb, the size of the thumb behind the heart, the light. So now we're getting the distinction between soul and heart. And of course, the Sufis put a great emphasis on the heart, but we also know the soul is the consciousness and so very important. So this is what Murshid has to say. And when you hear this, you'll start to think almost like those little Russian dolls, you know, where you open them and there's, oh, okay, there's more, until we're getting down to the essence, or we're getting back to the goal. So Murshid says, the heart is as a globe covering the light of the soul. The heart is as a globe covering the light of the soul. And its different emotions are different colors of this globe. And the different emotions are the different colors of these globes on the globe. So we know that there are colors for the elements. We've been given them. Earth is golden color. Or we could say sort of that golden color of sand, if you want to think of it that way. I like to think of it as an amber color. And water, of course, is kind of a cool green. You know, I have a white bathtub, so when I fill it with water, it's a beautiful soft green that I can see. But I like to think of it as emerald. Then we have fire. I'm going up the elemental scale. And the color associated with that is red. Red, so we could think of like coral or ruby. And then the next element is air. And air is blue, like the blue sky. And then we have last, ether. And ether is said to be the culmination and the dissolution of all the elements. And we can think of it almost like a rainbow, like when the beautiful droplets of water fall and the sun starts to go through them, so there's a light, but then you see these different colors as well. And that's ether. So the heart is as a globe covering the light of the soul. And its different emotions are different colors of this globe. every emotion is produced by a certain element. So we'll talk a little bit more about this. I think we'll wait and we'll talk about the elements and the emotions in a minute. When experiencing life through the heart, the soul at that moment thinks. So again, while experiencing life through the heart, the soul at that moment thinks, I am sad, I am glad, or I am afraid, or I'm humorous. In fact, it is a momentary experience. Again, or is it? Do we keep attached to it? When the influence of a particular element changes, the emotion has expired. Have you never been with someone, or haven't you yourself? Maybe you've been crying, and all of a sudden you're laughing. Has that happened to anyone else? Raise your hand. Come on, don't be shy. Everyone's done it. If the element has changed suddenly, or all of a sudden, well, there are many other reasons too, but I mean, we could talk about it in relationship to the elements. So we're feeling melancholy, and then all of a sudden something shifts and we're not melancholy anymore. We feel quite uplifted. Again, the elements. This is why when your teachers or you as teachers give those elemental breaths, ask people to do them, because when you're a master of the elements, you can change things when you want to. This is called alchemy. We're on a mystical path. We're not victims here. We can change things. We can change the atmosphere. God willing, we become good enough practitioners, we can uplift the world. That's what we're doing. We're trying to do, I think. You know, first we learn from ourselves. We're a little laboratory, and then the world becomes the whole wonderful experiment, and we can participate in it. Okay, so the soul thinks, I am sad, I'm glad, I'm afraid, I'm humorous. In fact, it is a momentary experience. When the influence of a particular element changes, the emotion has expired, and the soul is as pure as it was before. That's a really interesting, those are interesting words, and it's an interesting thought to think about when you've maybe felt that. It may be after, that the emotion expires and the soul is as pure as it was before. You know, I think sometimes we're often attached to stimulus and we're attached to sensation. I mean, I've witnessed this in my own self. I've witnessed it in life, that people are often not comfortable with silence, and they're not comfortable with solitude. I mean, we've heard so much about that these days too, when people are isolated, because the eye needs something to look at. Maybe the soul wants something to feel or experience. So, but what is it in its pure state? Here's an opportunity. When the influence of a particular element changes, the emotion expires, and the soul is as pure as it was before. So when you reach that state, there's nothing to do. Just try to be in that vast, open, pure state. And don't cling to it. Just wait to see what arises in the next moment. Murshid says of the soul, nothing touches it. It is pure by nature, and it always remains pure. So it while it can be distracted, and it can be put in captivity, its essence is still pure. This is beautiful. Listen to this and imagine it. If 10 people in turn looked in a mirror, the mirror shows everyone their face reflected in it. And it is clear enough to take every reflection. In the end, the mirror is as clear as before. No face that has ever been reflected in it has left its impression on it. Well, how amazing is that? And do we see the connection with polishing the mirror of the heart, polishing the mirror of the heart, polishing the mirror of the heart? Zikr, zikr, practice, breath, it all polishes the mirror of the heart. Well, here we have it. We become a mirror. And there may be impressions that are put upon it, but they don't have to stay. They come and they leave. They come and they leave. So we want to take great care to polish that heart. So it's very clear, kind of like these earrings, except for they're rigid. But, you know, the light's being reflected. I use everything as a visual aid. Professors learn to do that. Anyway, so we want to have that pure feeling in the heart and a stillness. Now, if we could stop here for just a moment and we could think about the heart. You can use the image of a mirror and you can polish it, or you could think of a lake that's very still. We've all seen those beautiful images when you can't see, is that earth, is that sky, because the reflection is a mirror. And I will share this with you, that during my training, in the days I was receiving training with Pir Vilayat, that was one thing that we were asked to do when we were attuning to people, and a guide does that, can hopefully work on stilling oneself and letting that be just a mirror or like a lake, and what arises is revealing and can be helpful in offering guidance, you know. And so in our training, we were told to and I think I've told this before, but it bears repeating. We were working in pairs, and the person that was the sender would be concentrating on a particular wazifa, and the person that was the receiver was to try to empty and become like that, a mirror or a stilled lake. And like a stilled lake, if you're a sailor at all, you know, you look for that ripple and you cast your sail into it so it can propel you. In the same way, you can do that looking within, and you can use the breath to propel you, and you feel a vibration. You sense the vibration on that lake in the heart. And then when the vibration arises, you can tune to the person and you can discover that vibration. In this instance, it was a particular wazifa. And, you know, we were tested on this. We were asked to reveal what we saw, and our intuition, our ability to empty and to feel this was being tested. This was part of the training. It was a really great training. We should do it at some camp sometime. It's not easy, but it's so good to learn that, just to empty and become still. So let's do this just for ourselves. Let's imagine that we're sitting by the Lake of the Ozarks together, and let's imagine that perhaps it's even early morning. You know, like those mornings when you go down to the lake for the sweat lodge, and it's very still and very beautiful, and where it's like that. And that lake is both external, but it's within. And there's this stillness. And we can see the reflection of the sky and the trees and the landscape. And when we go to the lake for the early morning sweats, it's before sunrise. It's often even a little dark there. And before anyone touches the lake or the wind whispers upon the lake, we May you notice the sun is starting to crest over the horizon, and soon we see that light reflected in the lake. And we know that that same light of the sun is this light that we see within the lake, and the lake's within the heart. And the heart is connected to the source of light. And what's more, what resides behind that, that the heart covers over, is the soul, that untouched, unperturbed, unbroken stream of consciousness of pure light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Amen. Pure Vilayat used to say this, and I think perhaps that I can probably count on three fingers, but I'll say one hand, the times that things have been said to me, or not to me, but even publicly, maybe not directly to me, but they went deeply in me, and they changed my life, and this is one of them, and may it be so for you if you need to hear this. Pure Vilayat would say, again, he was using the metaphor of the mirror, and we've talked a lot about that just now with Anayat Khan's teaching. And Pure Vilayat would say, a mirror is never tarnished by the images that are cast upon it. A mirror is never tarnished by the images that are cast upon it. So again, I return to the idea of any kind of injustice or wrongdoing. That is something external to you. And while it may be even touched your body and brought harm, your heart, and brought sorrow, and your mind with thoughts, remember, a mirror is never tarnished by the images that are cast upon it. Those are things external. And yes, they did happen. But we can constantly work to, working with fine metal that maybe has a scratch on it, and we can polish and polish. We can release that impression, release that hurt, release that sorrow, and heal that wound. You know, sometimes, I don't know about you, but, you know, little minor operations or whatever, it used to be, oh, let it be exposed to the air. Okay, well, we could use that as a metaphor for all of our emotions. Just let them all be expressed. But now they're saying it's actually better to keep it covered. I'm not saying cover things up. I'm not talking about repression or suppression. What I'm talking about is the practices become the bandage. They cover it. They let it heal. I encourage everyone to take this teaching, whatever teachings you're working with, and bring them deeply in and let them be the salve that's used, and the beautiful bandage that's used. And it can really help. It can really help. Some of you know, because I've sent you the picture. I'm sort of noticing this one eye's a little saggy, but, you know, I've had some strange health things go on, these real weird anomalies. And one of them was, I don't even know how to describe what I looked like, because my eyes were swollen so big you couldn't recognize me, and they were swollen. My intention was to have the eyes open, but they were like shut because they were so swollen. And And my knees have also had, I've had some trouble in my knees with a lot of pain. But I thought to myself, I've got to get a hold of myself. I've got to ask God for help, and I've got to try to heal this, because I could just be going down the tubes completely. And I worked with the breath practice. You know that. You've probably been given it. Breathing in Yashafi and out Yakafi with the five cycles of the breath, and directing the breath towards these areas that were ailing me, and visualization of healing light and life. And I'm telling you, it's been in some ways really miraculous. And I don't have any special powers. God's the only one that can heal and help us. But I have a great belief. I believe that prayer can lead to miracles and real change. And I'm going to knock on some wood now because, well, I'm Italian and a little superstitious, that it hasn't come back. This is getting better and better. So I believe in the power of prayer and the power of our practice and the power of the exercise of the personal will for good, not for maybe gain, but for healing and for wholesomeness and for helpfulness to others. So this is just a little personal testimony there. So again, Pir Vilayat, a mirror is never tarnished by the images that are cast upon it. And then back to an icon. He says, there are nine different emotions which the soul experiences through the heart. And these are influenced by corresponding elements. So there we have it. If we become master of the elements, we can become master of these emotions, God willing. And then he says, and you'll see this because I'll attach it to this document. He says, there are nine different emotions which the soul experiences through the heart. And these are influenced by corresponding elements. Now, I thought as an experiment, I'm checking my time. We're getting close here. Let's do a couple. Let's concentrate on the feeling or maybe an experience that has allowed this emotion to arise. And let's think about humor and just watch the breath and see if there's a natural tendency for the breath to shift in a certain way. Humor. Or does the consciousness sort of shift in the body? And make a note to yourself about that, what might have shifted. You know, Murshid Sam always say, oh, I'm going to teach everybody how to meditate. Okay, that's enough. So, you know, catch it quick. All right. Courage. Think of courage and see what happens in the breath and in the body. Does the direction shift? It does for me. I mean, it could be up, down, sideways, front, back, but be mindful of it. And now let's think about indifference. What does that do when you think of indifference? I think maybe some people have an aversion. They think it means not caring. No, it means caring deeply, like universal love, not like I'm in love with you. It's like I'm in love with who? Everything. So think about indifference. And notice what happens in the, what maybe is called to mind, what's happened in the body with that. And maybe make a note to yourself so you can you'll get the notes of this in the teaching, and I'll also tell you. And we're about to end, I think, but let's close with joy. And I'll throw one in here that Mercia didn't, but notice the subtle difference in your breath and in your body, maybe in your thoughts, between joy and happiness. What happens? And with this, I wish that all of you and all beings are happy and have the causes of happiness, that you're free from suffering and the causes of suffering, and may the whole world live and abide in great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and all things that can bring harm to the heart and captivate the soul. I wish you love and light and life. And I would ask for you to consider the cost that it would have cost, brought upon you to come to camp. Consider being generous to the Ozark Fund. There's a PayPal button there. And if you'd like to contribute anything to me or other teachers personally, I think there are links to their names. I have a fundraiser out on Facebook, and I've also posted a link. You know, you can go to sufi-message.org and just click on donate. Donate anything is most heartily welcome. It helps us pay for our Zoom so we can have many visitors, and the website, which hopefully benefits you in some way and others. And I'll give you just a quick rundown of the elements with the qualities, and then I think we're about to close. Humor is air, uplifting and maybe moving in different directions, like laughter. Joy is ether, so it may bring, maybe you felt a kind of stillness, maybe a lack of activity, it's ether. Mercia talks about also emotions like sorrow. Sorrow can be earth. Fear, he talks about, and it's good to be able to observe these, because then by using an antidote element, while we visit those things and experience them, again, I'm not talking about escapism or bypassing. I think all of human emotions are important, and they inform our being, and they help us to be compassionate, and they allow sympathy to arise and relatedness to others when they're experiencing those. But sorrow, earth, fear is ether and air. Ether and air. It's almost like, you know, fear. You can't kind of grab it. It's etheric and it's air. It's in the mind. A lot of times it is. There's real fear if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Get out of there. Okay. Pity is water. Pity, water. Courage, maybe you felt this. It's fire and air. So it's fire and it can be magnified by the air element. Indifference is ether, fire, and earth. And that's so fascinating because that bridges the whole elemental scale. Ether, the top one, earth, the bottom one, and fire, the middle one. So all of those are touched upon. Passion, of course, we would think of fire, fiery temperament and fiery passion. And anger is fire and air. So it's like fire that maybe is out of control. You know, when you let air into fire, it can rage. I thank all of you for taking the time to be here. I'm so pleased.